With me in the studio is well-known singer-songwriter Dave Hawkins, who's been performing in Cincinnati for years. Dave, thanks for coming in.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks, Lee.
And it looks like you brought your guitar. Do we want to start off with a song?
Sure, that'd be great. Yeah, this is Sparky, my main guitar. Been with me for years. Why don't I do the title cut of the new album?
Okay, that'd be great.
This is called As Long As We Get There. Looking at a picture of a young man with a beer in one hand, smoke in the other, knowing that life would last forever. Looking in the mirror, there's an old man clinging to a walker with one hand, copy of the good book by his side, knowing that forever had arrived. Can we ever know where life's gonna go? Do we need to care as long as we get there together? Well, the old man woke up one day, found he still had a lot to say. Clutching his guitar in his hand, sleeping in cheap motels across the land. He spent a lifetime playing guitar, probably spent a little too much time hanging in bars, hoping one day he'd have it made. Now he figures he's just old and in the way. Can we ever know where life's gonna go? Do we need to care as long as we get there together? Now the wisdom that comes with age replaces youthfulness full of rage. Transgressions that once caused a mother's tears become regrets in later years. Now I'm looking at that young man in the photo. I'm telling myself he's someone that I don't know. Looking in the mirror, what do I see? I realize that young man is me. Could I ever have known where this life of mine was gonna go? Did I need to care as long as we got here together? Looking at a picture of a young man with a beer in one hand, a smoke in the other, knowing that life would last forever. I just knew that my life would last forever.
That was beautiful. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
And that's from your album, As Long As We Get There, that was released this year?
Yeah, the official street date was May 3rd.
Tell us about some of the musicians who were on it.
Oh, wow. I've always been so lucky to run across some really great musicians over the years, and they want to work with me, which is really exciting. Michael Gilbert Ronstadt, fantastic cello player, and he plays a bunch of other instruments as well. I guess I should mention that he's Linda Ronstadt's nephew. We played a couple shows together a few years ago. I think we've known each other 5 or 6 years now, and he said that he loves playing with me, so he's an unofficial member of my band. Peg Buchanan is a fiddle player that's been working with me. We've been working together for 25 years. She actually broke her wrist on the first day of recording, so we brought in Doug Hamilton to cover Peg's parts. He did an excellent job covering for her, but she still is listed on the album because she's been a mainstay of my music for so long. Stan Ginn, who's played drums for me for a long time, is in on there. Adam Sanregret on bass. Bobby Fisher played guitars. And we had Kenny Holycross played pedal steel guitar.
You also had Triple the Trouble?
Triple the Trouble, yes. The Shottlecotty Girls, the fantastic all-sister pop band.
They've been in a couple of times.
Yeah, they're fun.
And also you had the Flannel Horns?
Yes, it's John Zappa, Zach Granger, and Brian Hogg. They're all very closely affiliated with NKU Music Program. And I think actually Stan Ginn hooked me up with John Zappa, and they came in and just killed it on the last song on the album. It was really amazing, their work.
And you wrote all the songs on this album except for the bonus track.
Well, actually except the bonus track, and also there's a song called Ride On that was written by Jimmy McGinley, fantastic Irish singer-songwriter, a song I learned from Christy Moore about an old horse that's been put out to pasture, and he's watching his master ride off on a new horse. And that song kind of has hit home with me, being an over 60 folk singer who's been in the business for 40 years.
And how long had you been writing these songs that you put on the album?
Some of the songs just came to me in the last year, like the song Mom Jeans. I call that a throwaway song because when I wrote it, it was one of those songs that kept hitting me upside the head saying, write me, write me, write me. And I thought, I don't think this is my type of song. And like the story I tell in the shows, I wrote the song probably in 5 minutes time, and I demoed it in my studio, which is at my house. And my wife, who never comes into my studio, burst through the door and said, you got to record that. So that's where Triple the Trouble came in to sing backing vocals on that. So that was a 5-minute song that was just written in the last year. There's another song that actually I started writing when I was over on tour in England with Stacey Earle and Mark Stewart. So that's been 10 or 12 years ago that we did the Ireland-England tour. And I wrote one verse of that song then, and I finished it last year. So that song took me 12 years to write.
I noticed there's kind of a country flavor to some of the songs, like Four Leaf Clover and Married to a Bottle with that steel guitar, which is gorgeous.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've been doing a lot of work down in Nashville. I'm signed to a publishing company down there. When I started my career in the mid to late 70s, I was playing country rock, Eagles type music, as well as writing stuff. And then I took the little foray into the traditional Celtic music when I joined a band up in the Columbus area called General Guinness back in the mid-80s. And when I came out of that 4.5 years or however long I was with them, it did kind of have an effect on the songwriting that I had been doing prior to joining that band. But the old folk and country folk and folk rock has always stuck in my head.
How did you hook up with Tom Rush and Ian Anderson from Jethro Tull?
Tom Rush, I was playing at the Central Ohio Folk Festival up in Columbus, and that's going on, I can't remember if it's 20 years or 25 years that they've had that festival. And I started my career in Columbus. I lived in Columbus. I moved down here 20 years ago. And one of the festivals, Tom Rush was the main act, and they had Tom and I do a workshop together. It's kind of a songwriter's panel. So we spent some time chatting. I didn't play anything with him other than, you know, playing something in the workshop. Ian Anderson was really an odd thing. It was several years ago, I was doing some work out in the yard and my phone rang and I answered the phone and this guy with a British accent said, this is Ian Anderson. And I, And I thought it was a friend of mine from England calling me. So I said, yeah, Mike, that's really funny. And he says, no, this is Ian Anderson. Somebody gave me a copy of your CD. I was wondering if you might want to come to Kansas City to sing in concert with me. And I said, oh, let me think for a minute. Yeah. So, and that was just great. He was a fantastic guy and so down to earth. And we played the show and hung out in the green room and just like we'd known each other forever.
Was it just the two of you or were there other musicians?
He had his band and it wasn't Jethro Tull. His son was playing drums and then he had a couple other musicians. And I mean, for me, it felt like it was a Jethro Tull show. It was only Ian playing. So it was at the Performing Arts Center in Kansas City.
Do you have any rehearsal time ahead of?
Yeah, I flew in the afternoon and a car picked me up and took me straight to the Performing Arts Center. He had the charts of what we were going to do, and his band kind of already knew what they were doing. So that's the neat thing of playing at a certain level. You end up working with musicians who hear something one time and say, yeah, I know what to do.
What other well-known musicians have you played with over the years?
I did some recording with Sam Bush. That was always fun. And the interesting thing is we were down in Nashville working in the studio, and he asked me if I knew Katie Lauer. So I said, as a matter of fact, I do. He says, yeah, I love Katie Lauer. She's such a sweetheart. So that was fun working with him. I played a benefit concert, we were on the bill together with Peter Yarrow and Arlo Guthrie. That was cool being backstage with people like that. And I always have to pinch myself. And I've done a lot of work where I've worked with people who have worked with people. A gentleman named John Mock, who was in John Denver's band, he did some recording with me. Pete Huttlinger, who just died a few years ago, he had played guitar with anybody and everybody over the years, and he was down in Nashville.
What's your band now?
I call the band The Perfect Men, featuring Peg Buchanan on fiddle, because Peg's been playing with me forever. It's one of those things where when you're on the road, it's kind of hard to take a band with you because if you're on the road with a band and you're doing it cheap, you're talking $1,000 a day. So obviously that's not an easy thing to do if you're playing small clubs. In town, I have two or three drummers who work with me or two or three bass players. And so I just call it The Perfect Men because I kind of handpicked the best musicians that I knew to come and play with me.
All right, so slight detour. Tell us about the guitar you brought today and your guitar collection.
Oh, okay. Well, this is Sparky, and Sparky is my main partner, songwriting partner. She actually got her name because a gentleman by the name of Harry Sparks does my guitar work for me. Sparky came from, I was doing an open mic one night, and this young college kid came to me and said, boy, I'd love to have your guitar, and I'll trade you guitars. And he opened his guitar case, and it was this 1999 Taylor 310, which is a beautiful guitar. And I said, yeah, you know, my guitar is a beater. I really will not trade you. And a few weeks later, he came back and he said, yeah, man, he says, I feel bad. He says, I'm going to show you my guitar. And he opened the guitar case and a buddy of his had accidentally dropped something on this guitar and it broke the side of it, called the bow of the guitar, and it needed major repair. And I said, well, what are you going to do? He said, well, I'll probably just throw it away. And I said, well, I will trade you my guitar, which at the time was, you know, an $800 or $1,000 guitar. And so I traded him even for this guitar and took it to Harry. And he, over the course of 4 to 6 weeks, he had sent it around to different people to get it put back together. And she's been with me ever since. I have a flight case and a gig bag case for when I travel. But she's been broken a few times. TSA broke her twice, and Delta broke her once, and US Air broke her once, and Harry keeps putting her back together. So actually, I met a Taylor guitar representative in Austin, and I told him the story, and they immediately had me send the guitar to them, and they put a what they call the expression system, which is a special sound system where you can hook it into a PA. And they put that in there gratis for me, retrofitted it. So when I was on the road, I can just plug in when I go on stage. And they were gracious enough to make me one of their pro artists. So that's exciting.
Do you have any other guitars?
I have 8 guitars altogether. I have 2 other Taylors. I have a GA3, which is a 2010 guitar. It's a grand auditorium. Then I have what's called a baby Taylor. It's like a little miniature guitar. Then I have a 1936 Kalamazoo, which is made by Gibson and sold Sears Roebuck catalogs back in the 30s. And an old Regal guitar, which is a parlor guitar that's from 1933 that was my uncle's. And my mom found it in their attic and gave it to me. And then I have a Fender Stratocaster, a 50th anniversary edition Strat, which I play occasionally, but I'm not really a lead guitar player, so I feel embarrassed when I'm on stage with that and somebody who really knows how to play. So,
well, you've got a couple of concerts coming up this month. One of them is December 20th at the Blind Lemon.
Right.
And the other one is December 23rd. That one's going to be pretty special. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, December 23rd. Well, my wife and I live in College Hill, and two of my favorite venues to play are Marty's Hops and Vines, which is a small beer wine shop there in College Hill. And the other is College Hill Coffee Company, which is on the corner of Hamilton and North Bend in College Hill. And Tina Stoberl has me play there several times a year, and she's asked me if I'd come in and play on the 23rd. So joining me for that show, which is 7:30 to 9:30, Peg is going to be playing with me, Peg Buchanan. Michael Ronstadt's in town, so he's joining me on cello and mandolin. And then Lance Martin, who is the new pedal steel player who's been working with me, he's going to be playing pedal steel and lead guitar.
So what's your program going to be?
Well, we'll throw a few holiday songs in, but I kind of feel that by the time you get that close to Christmas, people are kind of sick of hearing Christmas songs everywhere they go all the time. So we'll do some stuff off the new album and some of my older stuff. I have a couple Christmas-type songs that I wrote, so we'll probably throw those in. And then Michael Ronstadt has, boy, he's got five or six albums out. And so what we did the last time he played there with me was he pulled out a few of his tunes, and I took a break, and he just did his thing with his cello, which is really cool.
Do you have a new album in the works?
I've been demoing some stuff, just guitar, vocal stuff. I probably have about half the songs towards a new album, and I'm debating with myself. No, I'm not. Yes, I am. whether I want to put out another album next year or so close to this one, but it's a juggling thing. Next year or maybe 2019, hopefully next year.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, well, thank you, Lee.
I've been in conversation today with singer-songwriter Dave Hawkins. He's been sharing his latest project, As Long As We Get There. Dave, would you like to play another song from it? Take us out.
Sure. I'll play a song that I wrote for my dad, who was raising. He decided one year when he was a kid in Harrisburg, Illinois, in Saline County, he was going to raise some chickens and enter them into the fair. And 2 weeks before the Saline County Fair, somebody had stolen all his chickens. So this is a song I wrote for him and put on the album. And sadly, he never got to hear it. So it's called Somebody Stole the Chickens. Melvin was raising some chickens as a project for the FFA. He'd clean out the chicken coop and feed them before going to school every day. He knew he had some winners and looked forward to the county fair. But one day when he came home from school, the chickens just weren't there. Somebody stole the chickens. Rhode Island Reds, it might have been a neighbor, some jealous kids. Melvin's chickens never made it to the Saline County Fair. They probably ended up in a chicken pot pie on someone's dinner table somewhere. Melvin's daddy told him, it's your own darn fault. This probably never would have happened if chicken coop got locked. In the middle of the Depression, folks will do anything for their next meal, even if that means stooping down to beg, borrow, or steal. Somebody stole the chickens. Rhode Island Reds, it might have been a neighbor, some jealous kids. Melvin's chickens never made it to the Saline County Fair. They probably ended up in a chicken pot pie on someone's dinner table somewhere. Thank you.
Melvin approached his 90th year, and I visited him one day. He told me the story about chickens and how he had the urge to pray for all the folks who got nothing, and we should help them when we're able. And he hoped whoever stole the chickens were grateful as they gathered round their table. Somebody stole the chickens. Rhode Island Reds, it might have been a neighbor, some jealous kids. Melvin's chickens never made it to the Saline County Fair. They probably ended up in a chicken pot pie on someone's dinner table somewhere.
Dave Hawkins. For Local Exposure, I'm Lee Hay.